So into 2007, I was at the end of my wits and looking at a career change myself. Had been working in sports business related fields my whole life, and it was time to kind of shake the proverbial snow globe of my life and try something new. And I did. So I took a leap into something I couldn't know anything less about, and I went to work at a software company. A friend of mine recommended it. It sounded like a good time, good challenge, be a chance to kind of see the world through a little different filter. The people there were what made that happen. Amazing family. Family-oriented, small business, Gig Harbor, about 27 employees. Wildly successful for their size. They kept things under wraps. The owner was a car buff. He had a custom-built garage that held about a dozen exotic cars. Cars stacked on top of cars, hydraulic lifts, Ferraris, Lamborghinis, Mercedes, these kinds of things. Great guy, not your pretentious type, very generous fellow. So generous, I was quite a surprise the day he showed up at the office, and as I was sitting there working, I heard the clink of keys, and I looked down on my desk, and there are the keys to a Ferrari, and they have the horse on them, and he says, come on outside, I got something for you to go take for a spin. And there's a brand new Ferrari F430 Spider sitting there, okay? I drive a Ford Ranger 5-speed with roll-down windows. My car is one automotive chromosome away from being a U.S. mail delivery vehicle, okay? Like, in this car, this Italian car, I mean, this is like gasoline-burning sex. This thing is incredible. It comes in Rosa Corsa. That's Italian for racing red. It's the country's emblematic color for racing. It's the everything that races out of Italy comes in this color. The paint code is FF2800, and the first pigment is 100% pure red, and then they just make it cooler from there. It's amazing. I mean, you can smell the leather, you know? So I take off, and I go for a drive in this thing. One of several. It was the only thing cooler than having a Ferrari is having someone else's. Hires a new guy in, a guy named Kevin. I'll call him Kevin for the story. Brings a new guy in, and he's younger than me, smart, bright, intelligent. He actually came from a customer and knew the business we were in real well. And this guy's job was going to be to kind of transition the company as the owners began their retirement transition into the next phase of their life. And so it was great. He was an inspiring guy, Kevin was. He was just always a step ahead. I remember one day we had a conversation with a younger employee, a younger guy in his early 20s who was kind of slacking, having some trouble. So we pulled him in the office and had a little sit down, the little, you know, discipline thing. And the discipline wasn't like, you're out of here, but it was more like, let me put my arms around you. Like, this isn't going to be your last job, man. And there's some things here that you're setting yourself up for that are going to be problems later in life. And this is how we coached this guy through. And I was like, man, this is so good. This is what I was looking for in moving forward in my job. It was a place where people mattered, where people were really first. If we make good people, we'll make good money. Clearly, they were making good money. We had the garage full of toys to show for it. We would do things together like a family, this business. A couple of times a year, we'd do these big charity events. We would take the Ferraris, and we'd go out to a veteran's home, and we'd take these veterans out for a day drive. These guys, at the end of their life, who were in a home now, war veterans, and we'd take them out in the sunshine with the tops down and drive them down by the water and stuff. It was awesome. We'd take them to the Ronald McDonald House in the holidays and take tons of toys and tons of money and food and things and give these kids and these parents who'd just been in a bad, bad place and distract them for a while. Take them outside, let them kind of see something fun. Share life with them, a little different aspect. And this went on and on and on. Just every day was like this. We had lunch together. We would have these in-depth conversations. So it was a summer evening. My phone rang. It was my dad was in town. He lives out of town. He was visiting. We were sitting out by the fire. It was a June summer. Just all the glory that the Pacific Northwest gives you in the summer. And my phone rings, and it's Kevin. And he calls. And that was unusual. We didn't really keep up after work too much in that regard. And he says, hey, man, how's it going? I said, yeah, it's great. You know, what's going on? And he says, I think I'm gonna move on. I think it's time for me to change jobs. And I was like, yeah, man, it seems like you just got here. I mean, it's been a couple of years, but it just time was going so well, you know. And I thought, gosh, I kind of thought you'd be the transition for us. You know, this was this was great. He said, yeah. He goes, I know. He goes, if you see anything out there, just you think, you know, that works for me, think about me. Let me know. I said, okay, I will. And that was kind of the end of the call. It was kind of short. So I was kind of bummed. I was like, gosh, darn, man, I hate to see this guy go. You know, he's just, that kind of inspiration kind of brought me down. Next morning, I get to the office, and pretty normal day. You know, I roll in early and getting things going, getting the day going. And the owner walks in. He comes into my office, and he comes in, and he closes the door, and he looks at me. And immediately, I can see in his eyes, I can see in his countenance, I can see something is different. Everything is there inside, fear, confusion, anger. And he looks at me, and he says, effective immediately, Kevin's been fired. You're not to discuss this with anyone. I'll have information for you soon. And he walks out of my office. Shortest conversation I've ever had with him in my life. And something was different. By day's end, the police had been at the office, followed by the FBI. Kevin's office had been closed, everything removed, paper shredder, pens, pencils, pictures, computers, the whole thing. Owner came back in into day as we sat there just watching this bombshell unfold, wondering what is going on. And Kevin had been stealing everything. Millions and millions of dollars gone. He was bright enough for it, he knew the system well enough for it, and he'd done it. And now they were picking up, starting day one, picking up the trail of where this had gone. We couldn't believe it. I mean, here was a guy that was just this amazing figure. And now we're getting this information. So as the days turned into weeks and months and unfolded over the course of the next few months, the saltwater fish tank in the lobby was drained and emptied. The big screen TVs in the employee lounge were sold. Benefits were cut back. Employees started to get shed. Commissions were cut. We went from 27 employees to 6, and that included the two owners, so really it was like 4. And this is all going down in sync with the economy that's just crashing in the U.S. right now. The bubble is going out. I mean, we're hitting the bottom. People that are losing their jobs are waiting 15, 18 weeks for unemployment benefits for claims. People are not landing on their feet. It is horrific. People in other jobs are losing their jobs and not landing on their feet. I'm watching it come downhill fast. This turns into paychecks missing, delayed, and then gone. People kept their job working for free for hope because they thought, I'd rather be doing something than nothing. And out there, there's nothing. I'm gonna die sooner there than I am here. So they just kept hanging on. It just kept rolling downhill, day after day after day, until the point where the money's gone, we're living on credit, things are at risk, we're hitting the bottom. I stood in the pantry and I put food back on the shelf because I thought, no, my kids are gonna need that for lunch today. Meanwhile, I'm trying to pick myself up and go. I got to fight, okay? I still got to pick up my sword and go. I've got a house, I've got a wife and kids I've got to take care of. What am I going to do? So we're fighting, we're charging. I'm freelancing, I'm taking on contract work, I'm working all hours of the day and night, anything I could do to stitch things together to hold on tight. In the meantime, I'm just dragging this anchor of Kevin in my life, of all this that has fallen apart from Kevin. Kevin has cost us all these jobs, all these good people I knew that I worked with that don't have jobs, that are losing their cars or their homes or more. And I'm dragging this anchor of weight with him. He's gone. We haven't heard from him. He's disappeared. There's conspiracy theories and rumors that the money is out of the country. I mean, it's over. He got away. And we're left carrying just destruction. And I'm trying to figure out how to keep moving forward. I'm like, you know, I'm getting some work. I'm getting things together. We're kind of putting a dollar back on top of a dollar, just barely. But I still feel like I'm drowning, you know. What am I going to do to keep pushing through this? And ultimately, I got another job. I got back on my feet in that regard, in the job sense. In fact, I went back into sports. I went back into a place that was near and dear, and it felt good, and that was great. Fine. But I was still hanging on to this anchor, this thing that was just really weighing me down that I couldn't get over. And then I remembered a story. I remembered a model that I'd heard. You've probably heard it. And I remembered a story about when God came down to earth. And he chose a group of guys to hang out with him. And they lived life together. And these guys were as close to him as they could be. They were as close as anyone was going to be. And they saw things and they believed things that no one else could see and believe because they were there. They were as close as they were going to be. And yet, a couple of them still went the other way and failed him. To the point of death, right? They killed him. And yet he forgave him. Anyway. And I thought about that and I thought, and who am I to think that some guy taking down another guy or letting down another guy is so big in that regard? Who am I to think that I'm going to hold this over this guy forever? In my timeline, this guy's merely inconvenienced me. I'm not dead. Neither is anybody else here, really. He's inconvenienced this. It sucks, and it hurts, and I don't like it, but it's not that big. I can forgive this. I can do that, too. And when I learned that, and when I realized that that was my choice, and that was something I could express, even though I was never going to see him, never got to tell him, didn't matter, in my heart, I was able to say, all right, man. And that's when I was able to, in my own career, move forward again. Leave the anchor behind, keep moving forward. It's not going to last time it's happened. It's happened again, and it's going to happen again. I know that. It's part of our design. We're going to do that to each other, but I get it. I realize that to live a life without forgiveness is not to live at all. Thank you.